evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, May 6, 2021. 20 land grabbers are detained in South Sudan's capital, Juba.
And if the investigation proves not complete, he will be remanded with the authority of the approval of the magistrate.
And some U.S. senators visit Sudan.
We are here to visit Khartoum and to visit elsewhere in Sudan to express support and enthusiasm for the transition underway in Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan National Police Service has detained 21 people in connection with land grabbing at Amadi residential area along the Juba Yei Road. For VOA News, Viola Elias has more on the story.
Majok Yin, a community leader in a protection of civilian site in Juba, confirms that a group of IDPs sheltering at the POC site in Juba are under police custody in Haimona. Yin insists the IDPs arrested yesterday are not land grabbers, saying they obtained permission from the local community in the Amadi area to farm on the land in question. He says there is no clear reasons why the nearly 2,000 IDPs who have lived at the POC site for more than 8 years were arrested after they consulted with the local authorities about farming the land.
If you want to grab the land of anybody, I think this thing will be happening the first day in day one. But people went there and consult with the people on the ground. They want to cultivate. Yes, they need just some spaces just to be given to them. I think I'll be turn people as went there and grab the land.
Yin says the police should have used peaceful means to resolve such disputes, urging that arresting civilians without a proper investigation isn't fair. Colonel Dakarlo, deputy spokesperson of South Sudan National Police Service, says land disputes and reported land grabs have become a big problem in the country. Carlo says it is illegal for IDPs to go to Juba's Amadi residential area and settle on other people's land.
For the group that has gone to Amadi and started erecting and occupying the land, it is illegally, and we go to legal provision. They have to go to the community. And if the community have a space and accept, they go to the land department. So they get the document of land acquisition that will defend them. But you cannot just come and you start erecting your house and make your own local survey without the knowledge and without approval from the authority. It's true. The community has given you the land. But the community is belonging to the Central Equatorial Government. So these people have been arrested.
Colonel Duck says all South Sudanese have the right to settle anywhere in the country, but an individual must apply to the land authority in order to acquire land. He says South Sudanese law gives all suspects 24 hours to be held in police custody, but can later be free on bail.
According to our Southern Sudan Penal Court 208 and Criminal Court of Procedure 208 and Law of Evidence 206 and the Land Act, any accused cannot be detained more than 24 hours. And if the investigation proves not complete, he will be remanded with the authority of the approval of the magistrate.
Carlo is calling on all South Sudanese to desist from land grabbing to avoid land disputes across the country. Yin says the community leaders in the protection of civilian site do not support land grabbing, and he is appealing to authorities to release all 21 IDPs who were arrested yesterday. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The Church d'Affaires at the Vatican Embassy in South Sudan announced the appointment of Bishop Matthew Remigio of Wao Catholic Diocese to lead the Catholic Church in Rumbek as the Apostolic Administrator. After the bishop-elect for Rumbek Diocese, Christian Kalesare, recovers from his injuries sustained when gunmen attacked him more than a week ago. While some Catholics welcome the appointment, Others say the Catholic Church needs to embrace democracy to avoid attacks on church leaders. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Monsignor Mark Kadima, the Childless Affairs of the Vatican Embassy in South Sudan, announced the appointment of the Rumbek Apostolic Administrator yesterday.
On behalf of the Apostolic Nuncio, I wish to announce to you that the Holy Father, Pope Francis, has appointed the Most Reverend Matthew Remigio, Bishop of Wau, as the Apostolic Administrator of Rumbek Diocese. Bishop Remigio will temporarily govern Rumbek Diocese until the Bishop-elect, the Most Reverend Christian Kalasare, is healed, ordained, and takes over the governance of that diocese, hopefully as soon as possible.
Monsignor Christian Kalasare was appointed by the Vatican as the bishop-elect to Rumbek before he was shot in both legs by unknown gunmen not long after his arrival last month. Kadima says Bishop Remigio's appointment takes effect immediately. He says Remigio will continue serving as the bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Wau at the same time. John Maddell, a Rumbek Catholic, says he is happy the Vatican considered bringing in another bishop to take care of the Rumbek Diocese following the attack on Bishop-elect Kalasare. He says as Catholics, it is their duty to respect the decision made by the Vatican.
We cannot interfere with the powers of His Holiness, the Pope Francis, because any decision taken by Vatican, I think, is subject to implementation only. So I welcome the appointment. To fill the vacuum left by Bishop until when he recovered, I think he will be back to continue his normal responsibilities and duties. And I appreciate the Vatican for having responded to appoint the one who will be taking care of the diocese until Bishop recovered.
Daniel Dicci, a Catholic in Juba, says he is glad the Vatican appointed another bishop to lead the Rumbek Diocese. Dicci says he believes the attack on Monsignor Kalasare was carried out by a few individuals who do not represent the majority of Catholics in the area, and the burden should not be levied on the faithful.
There is necessary need to have an apostolic administrator to govern or to guide the diocese of Rumbek. Secondly, it is the few sinners, the ones that committed the acts. We can punish the majority because of the few that committed the act. So it is necessary to have someone in place to help. Meanwhile, the bishop-elect is having treatment.
James Arusi, a Catholic in Juba, says he too supports the appointment of the new apostolic administrator, who he says will guide the people of Rumbek in their faith. But he also believes the church should consider electing leaders to positions rather than appointing them. He says local people should have the right to decide who their leaders are in church.
The church needs to adopt also the principles of democracy and allow people vote for whom they want to be in the church. This will help completely to minimize the issues of people getting shot and quarrels behind the altar. If a bishop is corrupt, the congregation has a voice to vote him out. This is just a normal exercise of governing a society, and this should be applied within the church.
Last week, in a video trending on social media, Bishop-elect Kalasare assured the people of Rumbek that he will return to the diocese and urged the faithful to be united in prayer, to uphold forgiveness in the community, and to seek justice. After the attack, Kalasare was flown to Juba, then transferred to Nairobi for further treatment, where he continues to recover from his injuries. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
United States Senators Chris Coons and Chris Van Hollen concluded a visit to Sudan to support the democratic transition in the country and pledge $7 million in development assistance to Sudan. The U.S. senators met with top Sudanese officials, including head of the Sudan's Sovereign Council, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok, and Finance Minister Jibril Ibrahim, as well as civil society groups. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Democratic Senators Chris Coons of Delaware and Chris Van Hollen of Maryland met with the head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok and other top Sudanese officials and civil society members as they toured the Sudanese capital Khartoum and other parts of the country. At a joint news conference in Khartoum on Tuesday, Sudan's Finance Minister Jibril Ibrahim said the two senators played a key role in lifting Sudan from the U.S. state sponsors of terrorism list, as well as Congress's decision to provide Sudan with $700 million to support its struggling economy. Ibrahim says he discussed regional issues with the U.S. senators that include the dispute over the border with Ethiopia, as well as the long-running disagreement over Ethiopia's Grand Renaissance Dam. Sudan and Egypt have demanded that a binding agreement be signed in order to govern the filling of the dam. Senator Coons, a member of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said the United States will continue to support Sudan's transition and economy.
We are here to visit Khartoum and to visit elsewhere in Sudan to express support and enthusiasm for the transition underway in Sudan, to follow up on the American commitment of $700 million in development assistance, and to hear what else we can be doing to restore peace and prosperity and security for the people of Sudan.
Coons praised Sudan for taking important steps to clear its debts with international financial institutions such as the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the African Development Bank under the IMF Monitored Program to help Sudan address $60 billion in external debt.
We have just met to discuss the ways in which Sudan is making good progress, steady progress, in re-entering the global financial system, getting the forgiveness of old debts, arrearages, getting resolution of challenges that Sudan has faced in terms of international investment. And we are excited, optimistic about the future.
Senator Van Hollen also assured officials the U.S. government stands behind the Sudanese people as their government transitions into a democracy.
The American people have been very excited in following the progress since the peaceful revolution here just a little over 2 years ago. The transition taking place from dictatorship to democracy, the efforts to go from authoritarian rule to the rule of law, and the economic reforms that are taking place to make Sudan's economy a dynamic economy where people and families can achieve their aspirations.
During Sudan's partnership conference in June 2020, the U.S. pledged $356 million in development assistance to Sudan, a tenfold increase from the year before. In January, the Trump administration's Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, signed a memorandum of understanding which provided $1 billion U.S. dollars to help Sudan clear its arrears to the World Bank. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
In marking World Hand Hygiene Day, the World Health Organization is stressing the importance of good hand hygiene practices in stopping the spread of deadly infections. It says this is especially true at a time when the world is battling the coronavirus, which causes COVID-19 disease. For VOA News, Lisa Schwein reports from Geneva.
COVID-19 has dramatically amplified the importance of hand washing. The head of WHO's Infection Prevention and Control, Benedetta Allegranzi, says this simple action can prevent the risk of transmitting the infection when used as part of a comprehensive package of public health measures.
Effective hand hygiene also prevents any infection acquired in healthcare, the spread of antimicrobial resistance, and other emerging health threats. Hand hygiene is a simple action that has a central role in contributing to quality care and to the whole of society efforts to prevent infection spread and saves lives.
A WHO survey of 88 countries finds low- and middle-income countries have made significantly lower progress than high-income countries in implementing hand hygiene and infection prevention programs. The report notes 1 in 4 healthcare facilities in poorer countries does not have basic water services, and 1 in 3 lacks hand hygiene supplies. Allegranzi says the poorer countries lack the money needed to shore up their crumbling healthcare infrastructure. Consequently, she notes, most do not meet the minimal requirements to make a significant dent in reducing often life-threatening infections.
For example, in some low-middle-income countries, only 1 in 10 health workers practices proper hand hygiene while caring for patients at high risk of healthcare-associated infections in intensive care units. While also in high-income countries, hand hygiene compliance rarely exceeds 60 to 70%.
WHO reports every year healthcare-acquired infections affect millions of patients and health workers globally. Europe alone, it says, records nearly 9 million infections yearly. The UN agency says highly effective and low-cost hand hygiene strategies are available that could reduce these infections by half. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, the epicenter of COVID-19 continues to change. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you know any first aid techniques?
Come to think of this question, I thought I do, but seriously, I think I may not be able to do too well if there is any situation present. Maybe it's something I need to go in and learn how to do. It could help somebody tomorrow.
During our school days, the Red Cross Society, the clubs that we joined, they taught us a lot. When a child runs high temperature, you sponge the child with water from the leg to the head. Then you just rush the person to the hospital for best treatment.
In case if you have drowned maybe from water, the first aid technique that is available to be given is a kiss of life to a person that has drowned into water.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. India's coronavirus deaths rose by a record 3,780 during the last 24 hours, a day after the country became the world's second after the US to cross the grim milestone of 20 million infections. The Indian diaspora living in the country is watching in horror as India battles the devastating surge of COVID-19. VOA's Mariama Diallo has more.
For Indians living in America, the daily crush of dark news from the homeland is a reminder that the pandemic is far from over. Virginia resident Varsha Mehta.
It's heartbreaking. They don't have beds. People are laying. There is 4,000 people are dying every day. And it's an unbelievable situation.
Indian Americans say the world's largest democracy was not adequately prepared. Nihir and Stryker, both Virginia residents.
India's infrastructure is just not built to handle something like this, just given overcrowding and the amount of people crammed into just small spaces at all times. And I think once the first wave kind of settled down, like across the world, it was this sense of, okay, back to normal, but I mean, everybody experienced the second wave in some sense, and it's just hitting India a lot harder.
I definitely have, like, elders in my family who've gotten vaccinated or at least gotten first dose, but you can definitely tell that they hasn't been efficient enough, and you could say that that's the fault of the government, probably, to not be devoted to committing and getting the resources that they need before lifting all these restrictions and saying that, you know, COVID is not in India right now, they'll be fine.
With over 20.2 million cases, India has the second highest number of COVID-19 infections behind the United States and the third highest number of deaths behind the U.S. and Brazil. Tuesday, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters the United States is continuing to send aid to the hard-hit South Asian nation. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Still on COVID, with an estimated one-third of the U.S. population hesitant to get vaccine for COVID-19, a new study indicates that the approaches by faith community leaders can help convince people to get the shot. VOA's Laura Bowman reports from a church in Washington, which was the site of the city's first reported COVID case.
Hello.
Christchurch Georgetown is one of the oldest churches in Washington. It's also where COVID-19 arrived, when the Reverend Timothy Cole became the city's first coronavirus patient. It earned him a new nickname.
Patient Zero, which is a name that it's going to take a bit of living down, I think.
The Christian understanding of love.
Cole has been vaccinated, and so has nearly everyone in church this day. He's urged his parishioners to get the shot for their own health and for the welfare of others. And he's happy for more faith leaders to do the same.
I think there were good things that came out of me catching COVID, and it certainly alerted this community very early to the risks of it, and perhaps this community benefited in the long run by being, you know, very quick to react.
The Lord be with you.
On the Sunday prior to Rector Tim Cole being admitted to the hospital for COVID-19, he helped give communion to hundreds of congregants here at Christ Church. It was a wake-up call for the community.
I happen to have been a parishioner here at the service, the last service that Tim presented before he was diagnosed with COVID-19. That experience made us become very aware and made us, I would say, much more cautious and aware of what we should be doing and not doing.
A recent survey of Americans indicated one-third of them would look to a religious leader when deciding whether to get a COVID-19 vaccine. And over half say getting vaccinated is a way to make good on the aspiration of loving one's neighbor. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Turkey was recently praised as one of the most successful nations in containing the spread of COVID-19, prompting the government to ease controls. But a surge in infections coupled with vaccine shortages has forced a U-turn, with the country now under its most severe lockdown. Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul.
Istanbul is back in lockdown, along with the rest of the country, this time for nearly 3 weeks and with the strictest controls in place. Police vigilantly enforce a curfew. Only essential work and short shopping trips are permitted. Speaking just before the lockdown, this shop owner said the new restrictions have dealt a hammer blow.
We had just started recently compensating for the losses of last year. We had just started some kind of normalization with summer arriving, with people going back to shopping. But unfortunately, we will go through this again, and this will push us way back.
Previous lockdowns and modern hospital facilities have brought down the infection rate, prompting the government to ease controls earlier this year. An emboldened Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, even held a series of party rallies across the country. Within weeks, infections had increased fivefold to become the highest in Europe. Adding to Turkey's woes, the health minister said delays in vaccine deliveries from China have stalled the country's vaccination program. But Ankara announced Russia would start delivering its Sputnik V vaccine later this month. However, with no financial support announced for the latest lockdown, anti-poverty groups warn many people are desperate. Government officials hope this latest lockdown can save the economy, most importantly, the key tourism industry, with the peak season fast approaching. But for now, many in Istanbul are relying on food handouts and hoping that this lockdown will be the last. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp.
Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
We love to hear what you think about this program. Our WhatsApp number is +1-202-630-8011. We'll air your comments every Friday. We now leave you with some actually traditional song. Some actually traditional song. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.